Hi, this is Paula Morrell, and welcome to the Tales from the South podcast. Lord,
she finally got away.
How's everybody doing tonight? So how about tonight's music by Mark Courage? Y'all like Mark? Originally from Texas, singer-songwriter Mark Curry now calls Little Rock home. More can be found at markcurry.com. All right, well, welcome to Tales from the South, where Southerners bring their own true stories to life. We are on location at Pulaski Technical College Culinary Arts and Hospitality Management Institute in Little Rock, Arkansas. Tales from the South is presented by William F. Lehman Public Library, and tonight's show is in conjunction with the 10th anniversary of the Clinton Presidential Center in downtown Little Rock, and I'm your host, Paula Martin Morrell. On my left here playing for us tonight is blues guitarist Mark Simpson. Among other things, Mark was a featured house guitarist at the late Junior Kimbrough's Juke Joint in Tullahoma, Mississippi. Mark wrote our theme music and plays for us live each week. And how about our set back here? Y'all like our set? We are thrilled to feature these Delta screen doors with mixed media portraiture by esteemed Arkansas artist V.L. Cox, which are for sale. A portion of the proceeds from the sale of these works goes to Tales from the South. Our listeners can find out more about these pieces and VL at her website, greatfineart.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern-style storytelling? Tonight, our writers all tell tales about encounters with the 42nd President of the United States, Arkansas's own Bill Clinton. All stories are true and told by the Southerners who live them. Later tonight, Jenny Carlisle celebrates in a crowd of thousands of supporters on a historic night. Then Tyler Thompson is at the right place at the right time with Bill and his buddies. And we'll end the night jamming with Ron Hughes and the First Couple. Well, let's start the night here at Tales from the South with Barry McVinney, a famous actress and the president, in Tooting My Own Horn.
It was probably the loudest I have ever tried to play my saxophone. I was on stage at Robinson Center Music Hall in downtown Little Rock, a 2,500-seat auditorium without a microphone, even though there were mics for the vocalist and the pianist. Gotta love those sound men. I was playing a saxophone solo in a song entitled Solitaire, written by none other than Arkansas's own Academy Award-winning actress, Mary Steenburgen, who just happened to be in the wings. To most people, loudness in music means excitement. And I could tell that Mary was pleased by how we had interpreted her song. As we were playing, I could see her offstage swaying to the music with a beaming smile. After the song, she came on stage and gave each of us a hug. Then offstage, she told us she wanted to try and recreate this performance in a recording studio. Of course I said yes, but I didn't hold my breath waiting for it to happen. A few months later, a date was scheduled for the recording at a studio located in the historic Villa Marie House on Scott Street, the same one that was the iconic image for TV's Designing Women. When the session day arrived, I got a phone call from Mary Steenburgen, making sure I was going to be there, but her voice had an added urgency, hinting that something special was going to happen and that I would not regret being there. When I arrived at Villa Marie, there were already way more vehicles than the number of expected musicians, and these were not typical musician cars. The suited guys on the lawn with squiggly wires coming from the earbuds gave it away that Bill Clinton was taking some time to visit his friend Mary while he was in town for the 5th anniversary of the Clinton Library. As I walked into the building, saxophone case in hand, my pride soared when Mary said, "Bill, this is Barry. He's an amazing sax player." We quickly got down to the business of recording. The engineer decided to first record the vocalist over the pre-recorded piano track. That meant that I was forced to wait in the control room, sitting in between President Bill Clinton and Mary Steenburgen. Just an ordinary conversation between the three of us as the recording engineer did his thing. I tried not to say too much, and I listened as Mary tried to get Clinton's impressions of her song, whose lyrics explored the topic of infidelity. Finally, it was time for me to add alto saxophone to the music. Unlike Robinson Center, it was not appropriate for me to play loudly. This time, there was a microphone inches from my saxophone bell, and the recorded tracks were much more subdued than the excitement we had created months earlier. From my standpoint, things went well, and everyone was complimentary. Afterwards, Mary told me she wished I could have heard the president's comments that he was making while I was playing. After we finished recording, I was able to visit with President Clinton for about 5 minutes on a topic dear to both of us, saxophones. As we parted, he said, "It was an honor to meet you and hear you play. I hope I can hear you again in the future." I replied, "The honor was all mine."
Barry McVinney has played his saxophone in 46 states, earned a doctorate in music in Austin, Texas, and crossed paths with top jazz and classical musicians. He's chair of performing arts here at Pulaski Technical College. Next on Tales from the South, Jenny Carlisle gets swept up in the mania in Idiots for Clinton.
Louisiana Street was packed with the faithful. We stood shoulder to shoulder in front of a flatbed trailer stage, swaying to the blaring music, next to the former headquarters of the oldest newspaper west of the Mississippi. "Don't stop thinking about tomorrow." And of course, on that day immediately following the 1992 Democratic Convention, we couldn't stop. The July heat bore down on our faces, but our courage was undampened. Please, Lord, let it be dampened. We really wouldn't have minded a little thunder shower to relieve the treacherous heat indexes of the natural state. The MC on stage, who'd been keeping us posted with "thanks for coming, it really shouldn't be much longers," for over an hour, allowed a small shrug of her shoulders to show, and my friend Pat whispered in my ear, "I think they may still be in St. Louis." What? These were words I didn't want to hear at that moment. But it didn't shake my resolve in the least. The two of us had been in the crowd at the old State House when our governor had announced he was running for president. Our families had spotted us on the live CNN broadcast on that much cooler day, waving the Clinton for President sign someone had handed us as we walked up. Today, after the long primary season and the historic nomination, we were ready for a victory party. Ready for Alan Tipper to join the familiar faces of Bill and Hillary for the beginning of their cross-country bus tour. Many of the folks in the crowd were, like the two of us, state employees. Though not officially allowed to campaign on state time, we'd been to the headquarters before, immediately after 4:30, or sometimes at lunch. Fueled for years by Hillary or Miss Liza's chocolate chip cookies, we'd helped all we could. In the past few days, when Al Gore's name had begun to be mentioned as running mate, things had changed. There were signs of his emphasis on the environment. Actual signs. Handwritten on white sheets of paper and taped to everything all over the old Gazette building. No more styrofoam coffee cups. No more yellow Post-it notes. Yes, the times they were a-changing. We'd moved from cheering for a candidate to a nominee. And our loyal state employee buttons were bursting with pride. Meanwhile, back on the street, desperation was beginning to show. "That's Bill's friend Carolyn from Hot Springs with the microphone," Pat told me during a lull in the music. "Really, thanks so much for being here," Carolyn said for the umpteenth time. "We know you're excited, just like us, to be a part of history." Wild cheers erupted again. hands waving as the camera panned the crowd. Pat pointed to the nearby rooftops at a news site. Secret Service agents, dark glasses obscuring their ever-watchful eyes. Carolyn did have a beautiful voice and unwavering courage. This last thing seemed to be a common trait among other Hot Springs High School alumni we'd met. She trotted out several wonderful patriotic melodies, and then inspiration struck. Okay, I need your help with this one. Let's divide into groups. Her hand fluttered as others on the stage played along, bemused. This group over here, you're the oom-pah-pahs. Practice. Oom-pah-pah, oom-pah-pah, oom-pah-pah. Okay, good. Now you here in the middle, do this. Oom-sis-sis, oom-sis-sis, oom-sis-sis. Okay. And over here on my right, tweedledee, tweedledee, tweedledee. What could we do but comply? Now, all of you in the back, sing along with me. How much is that dog in the window? Okay. In the middle of my tweedledees, one desperate thought crossed my mind. Was CNN broadcasting this scene live all across the country? Mercifully, after only two choruses about the canine behind the glass, and maybe one more, this land is your land, the long-awaited bus rolled up and the party began. The guests of honor must have recognized our desperation, or the networks had run out of time, because the speeches were suitably brief. I remember most of the talking was done by Al that day, which was fine. We needed a chance to get to know him better. I recall that he had props with him, vegetables, something like, we can do this, we can beat the Republicans. And let's squash them. Okay, if none of you shares that particular memory, maybe I was delirious. But I do remember the chant that emerged after years of broken promises and reading the current administration's lips. It's time for them to go. So go we did. We reached for hands as they came through the crowd, snapped some pictures of backs of heads, and retreated to the safety of our air-conditioned cars. We slept well that night, partly because of heat exhaustion, but mostly because we knew we had given a rousing send-off to a familiar face that would soon be peering out of the windows of the White House.
Jenny Carlisle retired with 35 years of service from the Arkansas Department of Finance and Administration. After a short adventure in the private sector, she is back in public service as HR analyst for the Arkansas Economic Development Commission. Watch for her weekly sing-alongs on Facebook. In our next story here at Tales from the South, Tyler Thompson is privy to an old network in Clinton and the good old governors.
As a fortunate volunteer of the Democratic Party who happened to be in the right place at the right time in the early 1990s, I enjoyed being a motorcade driver for Governor Bill Clinton in his bid for the U.S. presidency in 1992. And after his successful bid and subsequent re-election in 1996, I held that position for 8 years when he'd returned to his home state to visit, and for yet another 8 years during his post-presidency. Needless to say, I had a most advantageous front row seat to many headlines during those years. Those experiences allowed me to meet people I'd never have had the opportunity to encounter otherwise. And I never took that driving responsibility for granted, not even for a second. Sometimes I'd escort a van load of media folks representing ABC, CBS, NBC, and the Washington Post and New York Times. Other trips, I'd be shuttling Clinton staff or family members, including daughter Chelsea, mother Virginia, stepfather Dick, or brother Roger. Believe me, when they were with me, it was not just another day. And what made it even more special was that when staff or family members saw me on repeat trips, they always went out of their way to offer a kind word. I could tell you 100 stories about serving as a motorcade driver for President Bill Clinton. One that stands out is what happened in 2003 after he left the presidency during the celebration of the extensive remodeling and expansion of the Arkansas Governor's Mansion. the sitting governor and his wife had led the efforts in the makeover. And on its completion, the previous surviving governors and their spouses were invited to join in the grand reopening of their former residence with a gala reception on site. Six previous governors showed up with their spouses, save for Hillary Clinton, who was attending to her duties as the junior U.S. Senator from New York. After the fete at the governor's mansion, all of the first couples were paraded in one long motorcade to the State House Convention Center for a standing room only banquet. Attended by political junkies of all stripes, it ended up being the social event of the season. Also in attendance were family members of former governors who had died. It was my honor to be one of the motorcade drivers who drove the former governors from the governor's mansion to the convention center. Entrusted into my care were former governors and U.S. Senators Dale Bumpers and David Pryor and their wives. The convention center was divided into three huge halls, two of which were decorated for the banquet itself, and the third, which welcomed our 18-vehicle motorcade. There were holding areas in this third space where the former governors and their wives could prepare for their grand entrances through the celebrants to the head table at the far side of the festivities. After the motorcade arrived in the convention center, I was nonchalantly hanging near the driver's side of my van when Betty Dortch, the noted artist wife of former Governor Sid McMath, approached me and asked me if I would be so kind as to escort her husband to the restroom before the grand entrance began. He was almost blind at the time, and I said I'd be happy to assist. He took hold of my arm, and off we went to the nearest restroom. When we arrived, it just so happened that Dale Bumpers and David Pryor were already there, standing there in the middle of the restroom in conversation. I directed Governor McMath to one of the porcelain altars, after which Bumpers and Pryor soon approached two of the other three remaining available depositories, when former Governor Jim Guy Tucker entered the room and headed for the stall, followed by, yep, Bill Clinton, who proceeded to the lone remaining urinal attached to the wall. Imagine me standing against the cold tile on the opposite side of the room from these five previous Arkansas governors, wondering to myself as I stared at my shoes if I weren't witnessing a metaphor for government going down the toilet. As each former governor completed his release, zipped his pants, and mercifully washed his hands, they came together in the center of the restroom and started to best one another with anecdotes. David Pryor said, "Mr. President, tell us the one about," when Clinton said, "David, we're in a restroom. You don't need to address me as Mr. President." To which Bumpers replied, "That's generic David, always sucking up to Bill." Every few minutes or so, a Secret Service agent would peek in the door to see if all was okay, and then just as quickly exit. Those former governors stood there in that circle for what seemed like forever, trading barbs, topping one another regarding campaign stories and legislative battles, and tales of supporters seeking political favors. If you thought that Clinton topped the pecking order there, I couldn't tell. The playing field appeared to be level in that room. Stories about coon suppers, toad suck rallies, and flying in Piper Cub airplanes for campaign appearances peppered the conversation. You didn't need to be a Mensa member to realize that I was the only man in that restroom who couldn't claim to have served as governor of the state of Arkansas. The only reason I was present was that I was the seeing eye human for Governor McMath. I thoroughly enjoyed the camaraderie of those men in that tiled and echoing room. But after 20 or 25 minutes of revelry, I wondered if someone or another few thousand folks in the convention center might wonder where these guys might be. Was this one of the reasons for what was known as Clinton time? During a rare break, while those former governors all took a breath at the same time during their impromptu toilet convocation, I spoke up for the first time and said that maybe Mrs. Betty might wonder what might be keeping her husband, referring to Betty Dortch McMath, and forgetting that three of the men's wives in the room were named Betty, including Mrs. Bumpers and Mrs. Tucker. Suddenly, the atmosphere in the room changed, with all the men patting each other on the back and going their respective ways. I returned Governor McMath to Mrs. Betty and sensed a feeling of energy from him when he let go of my arm and said goodbye that I hadn't noticed at first. You could tell that he had really enjoyed that exchange with his political compatriots. In all the fuss, I realized I hadn't used the facilities myself, so I reversed course. As I re-entered the men's room, it didn't retain near the excitement it had held moments before, with just me in the room. What a difference just a few minutes can make.
Dr. Tyler Thompson is a longtime resident of Little Rock and fervently believes that if he had truly learned from all the mistakes he has made so far, he would be one of the smartest people this community has ever known. In our final story of the night here at Tales from the South, Ron Hughes and his band have the president dancing in Jammin' with Bill.
It was 2009, and Patrick McKelvey, better known as Mokey, was having a birthday bash at a dive pizza joint in downtown Little Rock, Arkansas. Mokey was the daddy, founder, and band leader of the Greasy Greens, a legendary jump swing band that I'd been playing with for over 20 years. The place was packed. We were jamming, having fun, friends and fans, when suddenly in walked five suits with earpieces casing the joint. Within seconds, in saunters President Bill Clinton with his entourage, including Mary Steenburgen right beside him. The energy level, as you might imagine, amped up a little, and the party really started. Now, Bill and Hillary Clinton and the Greasy Greens go way back. The Greens played for Bill Clinton's inaugural ball when he was governor the first time, and the theme was denim and diamonds. While governor, the two would attend the Mardi Gras party at Gumbo Yaya's, and Bill and Hill would crown the king and queen of Mardi Gras. Summertime on the saxophone was his signature song when he sat in with a band. Then in 1998, the Greens surprised Bill by playing for his birthday party on the South Lawn of the White House. We invited everyone who had ever played with the band to go and bring their families, at our own expense, of course. Sheila Coonan, one of the singers with the Greens, remarked, "We used to get paid to play. Then we played for free. And now we pay to play." But it was worth it. Bill and Hillary came out of the White House, down the stairs, walked through the crowd, and lit up when they turned the corner and saw the band. Bill came on stage grinning, calling people by name, and Hillary picked up and started shaking some maracas, saying, "My dreams come true to play with the Greasy Greens." That was the best part of the day for me, I'll tell you. Yes, there was Rand, our drummer that went with us, who had a huge, wicked-looking knife in his truck. The Secret Service says, "What do you need this at the White House for?" He told them he was a landscaper and he cut sod, and they kept it for a little while and gave it back. And yes, there was an hour or more of standing, being herded around the, like cattle between the barricades and the hot sun. Bill is always late. My mom used to say, like Jesus, you know he's coming, you just don't know when, right? But the more time that passes, the more fun we had. It was all worth it. So here we were, 11 years later at Vino, celebrating Moki's birthday. Bill was in town for the 5-year anniversary of the library. Bill Worthen had left the library at an event and told the president he was going over to Vino's to celebrate Moki's party and hang out with the Greasy Greens, and Bill said, I want to go too. And he did. So, Moki got his birthday card, signed by the prez. A good time was had ball. Now, later that night, Jack Hill, who wrote for the Democrat Gazette for years, did an email blast to a bunch of friends recounting the party and a point in the evening when Bill Worthen was dancing with Mary Steenburgen and Bill Clinton was dancing with Sheila Coonan from the band, and all those old hippies were standing around trying to take a picture of the dancers with their cell phones, but none of them could figure out how to make it work.
Songwriter, musician, organic farmer, home energy consultant, and teacher of green building practices at Pulaski Tech, Ron Hughes has had a lot of Forrest Gump moments in his life. He is the father of twins and husband of Catherine. So how about our stories and storytellers tonight? Thank you to all of our writers. Thank you to our live audience here at the Pulaski Technical College Culinary Arts and Hospitality Management Institute. And thank you to ULR Public Radio. Tales from the South is presented by William F. Lehman Public Library. And our official media sponsor is AY Magazine, Arkansas's leading lifestyle publication at aymag.com. Additional support provided by the Writers Colony at Derry Hollow, ULR's Department of Rhetoric and Writing, the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, Urban Garden Montessori, and the Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Stitcher Smart Radio. You can download and listen to our podcast on our website. More can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
Song about a year ago on the I guess my impending 50th birthday. For 49 years I said it wasn't going to bother me. Then I found out I was wrong. But the great thing about writing songs or stories or anything like that is whatever it is that bothers you, you can use, right? So there's no wasted pain. This is called Midlife Crisis. Well, now maybe it's a midlife crisis, 'cause it's all on the table now. Well, maybe I'm just tired of trying. Oh, maybe I just don't know how I'm gonna sort through all these friends and relations who are waiting at the end of the phone. Well, ain't nobody wants to be lonely, Lord, but I wish that they would leave me alone. Well, now maybe what I'm feeling is special, or maybe just the way that it goes. Well, everybody seems to want to try to help me, but I'm kind of thinking nobody knows how they're gonna get me through this autumn depression when the winter of my life is in view. So maybe I'll just sit by the fire and I'll open up another bottle with you. getting out. I'm in the middle of the knowing and forgetting what it's all about. Well, now I ain't really sure there's an answer, and I don't know what I'm gonna do. So maybe, honey, while I'm waiting, I'll have a midlife crisis with you. That it'd be easier when I made it to the downhill side. I guess I kind of thought that I'd just be coasting. Well, I thought I'd be enjoying the ride, Lord, but it seems like I'm just pedaling harder. Or it seems like I'm not moving at all. Maybe this downhill road's getting steeper, and I'm headed for a hell of a, 'cause I'm in between the coming in and the getting out. I'm in the middle of the knowing and forgetting what it's all about. Well, now I ain't really sure there's an answer, and I don't know what I'm gonna do. So come on over, honey, snuggle. Hell, baby, you can have a crisis too. Yeah, because I'm in between the coming in and the getting out. I'm in the middle of the knowing and forgetting what it's all about. Well, you know I'm not really sure there's an answer, at least not before this song is through. So come on over, honey, and snuggle. Hell, baby, you can have a crisis too.
Thank you. Writer accommodations provided by Robinwood Bed and Breakfast in Little Rock. More at robinwoodbnb.com. And the Baker House Bed and Breakfast in North Little Rock. More at bakerhousenlr.com. Live sound and studio assistance provided by Infrared Studio in North Little Rock. More at InfraredStudioProductions.com. You too can experience Tales in person as a member of our live audience. We're now traveling throughout Arkansas and the South, bringing Tales to your community. Details on hosting a live show, our schedule, and ticket information can be found at our website, TalesFromTheSouth.com. Thanks for helping keep the art of Southern-style storytelling alive, and we'll see you next week on Tales from the South.